Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with LearnVisualStudio.net. In this lesson, we're going to talk about HTML5 forms. Up to now, all of our HTML5 work has been to display information to the user. In this lesson, we begin to retrieve information from the user. And I know you've used forms on web pages before. If you've ever signed up for a username and password for a website, if you've ever registered for a webinar or some other event, if you've ever purchased anything on the internet, then you've used a form. And there are different types of form fields that you can use to collect different types of data, or rather to restrict the types of selections or choices that a user can make. So in this lesson, we're going to talk about forms and even build a simple form with several elements on it. In the next lesson, then we're going to add some additional elements and talk about validation on the client, which is new to HTML5. So let's start with the basics of forms. Whenever a user types information into form fields, like a text box, for example, or makes selections in form fields, like a checkbox or a radio button, for example, they have to somehow trigger the submission of all the form information that they have filled out back to the server. All the information in the form, so all the data that they type or the selections that they make, it all gets bundled up and sent to the web server. How the data is bundled up and the destination of the data is determined by the settings in the HTML element called the form element. And so here's a typical form element. We'll be writing one of these on our own here in just a little bit. But we have a form element and a closing form element, and then there are two important attributes, the method and the action. And you can see that I've set the method equal to post. Post is one of several different types of HTTP messages. A post message says that you should encode up all of the form data and bundle it into the body. Think about putting it inside of an envelope, I guess you could say, of the HTTP message. If that data is sensitive, then it will typically encode all of the stuff in the envelope, all the data in the message body, using a secure sockets layer certificate. And so when you take a look at the action attribute in our form, you'll see that there's an HTTPS. The S on the end typically indicates that you're working with a secure sockets layer certificate. Okay? So the HTTP message of post is in contrast to the HTTP get message, and that bundles up all the data and puts it in the query string as a set of name value pairs. So that's roughly the equivalent of taking all the form data and sticking it on the front of the envelope, okay, where anybody can see it as you mail it off and to put it into the mail system. Honestly, most of the time you're not going to want to do this because it limits the amount of data that you can send. There's only so much space on that envelope's, you know, front side, and it prevents the data from the benefit of being encrypted by a secure sockets layer certificate. Anybody can read whatever's on the front of that envelope. If you were to encrypt that, the postmaster would look at it and say, I have no idea what you want me to do with this. It's just garbled, right? But if you were to encrypt the information inside the envelope, that would be just fine. It could still make it to its destination. So that's, think about it roughly in those terms. If you want to learn more about the differences between HTTP GET and HTTP POST, check out this Wikipedia article as a good starting point. All right, so we talked about the method equals POST, but now let's talk about the action. That attribute is the destination of the form's submission. Typically, the form submission will be to a server-side technology like ASP.NET or PHP or CGI using Perl or a number of other server-side related technologies. Now, that's out of scope for this series of lessons, but ASP.NET would be a great next step for you if you want to learn how to do serious web development, where you're interacting with databases, even taking that form field information that people submit, saving it into a database, or retrieving it out and creating new web pages, creating a template and filling in the areas of the page with data from a database to make it dynamic. But at any rate, that's for another day, another time. In this lesson, I can show you all the types of data that we can collect on a form on the client side using HTML5. And those form fields are defined between an opening and closing form tag. So for this video, I'm going to use a modified version of the example that we find here in the HTML5 specification. Notice I'm on this version of the specification called the Edition for Web Authors. Just as a reminder, we're looking through the table of contents for the entire specification. I'm going to open up my Find toolbar by using Control F on the keyboard and then typing in Forms, and you can see that that brings me to section 410, and there's quite a bit of information under 410. That's because forms are a really large topic. We're only going to look at a small subset of that. But if we were to open this up in a new tab, it uses a pizza shop, an online pizza delivery form as an example. And so I want to create a modified version of this for our purposes, but feel free to look through this and to complete the example using their code instead of my code after you've finished this video, just to learn a little bit more. All right, and so my example is going to be an absolute minimalist approach. Frankly, there will be a lot missing in my example with regards to attributes of the elements on the page. And so I'm going to just work through and point out the various elements along the way, but there will be much more to learn after this lesson is over. Okay. And to that end, make sure that you download the code file that's associated with this video. You can download it from wherever you originally downloaded this video to watch it locally on your computer, or from wherever you're streaming the video currently. There should be a zip file with code in it. There is a folder called Lesson 10 inside of that zip folder. And there will be three subfolders, before, after, and work. What I want to do is go to the before folder. I'm going to copy the lesson10.html page. I'm going to paste it into the work folder, where we're going to do all of our work. And then, like we've done in every other video, I'm going to right-click and select Open with Notepad. Use any technique you're comfortable with. But this will be a good starting point for creating our own forms. So we're going to start off by creating an opening and closing form tag. As we said at the outset, we need some attributes here. And the first attribute will create a post, and then an action. And we're just going to set it to a fictitious page that doesn't really exist. This will not work. If we were to create a full ASP.NET example, then this might be the basis for that. But if we were to hit the submit button, once we get to that point on the form, nothing will happen because form.aspx does not exist today. Okay. All right. So let's continue on then. And we want to collect the user's name. So we're going to use a text box that allow them to type in their name into our form. So I'm going to open and close a paragraph. And then I'm going to open up a label. And inside that label, I'm going to say customer name. And then I'm going to open up an input input element. And there are different types of input elements. So I'm going to select the type that I want to use. I'm going to use a text box, so type equals text. And then I want to give it an ID and a name, and I'll discuss that a little bit later, why I'm doing this for all these elements. But I'm going to name it the same, customer name and customer name. Just be sure to follow along. We'll explain why we're doing this much later in this lesson. All right. And if at this point we were to save what we've done and open it up in Internet Explorer by just double-clicking the web page from our work folder, you can see we get a text box. And so I can start typing in the name and just keep typing and typing and typing and typing. So clearly this isn't a good situation. What we want to do is limit the number of characters that somebody can type into our text box. And to do that, I'm going to set another attribute called max length, and I'm going to set that to 10. It might be a little short for a name, but it'll again allow us to at least exercise the max length attribute. So now as I begin to type, notice that it stops at about 10 characters, which is perfect. All right, so let's continue on. The next thing that I want to do is retrieve information like the size of the pizza that the individual is ordering, and then the pizza toppings. And so with regard to size, there's only three options: small, medium, and large. And so you can't choose small and large at the same time. We want to restrict the selections that the user can make. And to do that, we're going to use a series of radio buttons. Radio buttons are usually just circular buttons as they're represented in HTML. And you can select one, and when you choose one, the other two will become unselected. If you choose one of those, then your original selection will go away, so you can only make one selection from that list. And to kind of represent all of the given options together, we're going to kind of enclose them in a field set. And let me go ahead and type it out, then I'll explain what a field set is. So let's start with field set, and then a closing field set. And inside of the field set, I'm going to create a legend. I'll talk about what that is here in a moment. And we're going to just call this legend pizza size. All right. And so a field set groups form elements together with a common name, and the legend provides the name, in this case, pizza size. All right. And the legend has to be the first child of the field set. Just a little technical note there. So you'll see that once we add our individual radio buttons here in between the field set, open and close field set elements, you'll see that it creates a little box around it with a name in the upper left-hand corner. By default, using Internet Explorer's default style sheet, of course, we can change that. But let's create a series of paragraphs, a series of labels, and inside of those labels, we're going to put an input type equals, and instead of a text field, we're going to use a radio for radio button. And now I'm going to give each radio the same name, size, because each of them are going to be submitting either a small size, a medium size, or a large size. And so to differentiate each of those sizes, we're going to give it a value, for example, small. And then outside of the boundaries of the input element, I want to type whatever the user will see. So for like a example, a 10-inch pizza. All right. So this is the friendly text that the user sees. This is the value that will be submitted back to the web server if the user selects the small-sized pizza. All right. And of course, we want to finish out our label as well. So now what I'm going to do, I'm just going to highlight that entire line and copy and paste it three times. Because we want each of them to have the same name value, we will change each of the values, like medium, for example, and large, and then the text that the user sees. For example, medium, 12-inch, and then the large will be a 6 or a 14-inch, okay? So now, if we were to save this and then view it inside of our web browser, it would look like this. And so you can see the field set is what gives this a boundary. It puts a box around it, and you can see the legend up here kind of sits on top of that boundary. And here I have a series of radio buttons. And by selecting one, it deselects all the other options, okay? Which is perfect for small, medium, and large. Next thing I want to do is create a field set that will allow us to capture which toppings the user wants on their pizza. So let's start with a field set and a closing field set. And then we're going to add a legend, a closing legend. And here we're going to type in pizza toppings. Great. And beneath that, all right, I'm going to start with a paragraph. And inside that, I'm going to add a label. So I'll go ahead and close out the label because I forgot to do that last time. And then inside the label, I'm going to add an input. The type of input I want to use is a checkbox. All right, and then I'm going to give it a name, and we're just going to call this toppings. All right, and then I'm going to set the value for this individual checkbox. I'm going to go ahead and leave it empty for now, because I want to use this sort of as a template for the other items. I'm going to have four items total available for the pizzas. And so we're going to add bacon. So the first time I type in the value of bacon is what gets submitted to the server. This is the text that the user will see in their web browser, all right? So cheese. And we might say, like, for example, extra cheese, onion, and then finally, mushroom. I guess we're going mostly vegetarian here. I guess bacon is wouldn't fall in that category. Okay, but now let's go ahead and save this, and let's see what we come up with. There we go. So we have another field set, box around it with our legend pizza toppings, and we can select as many of these as we want to. All right? Let's go ahead and minimize that. And now let's ask what type of field set, or I'm sorry, what type of crust the user wants. So we're going to go back to a paragraph, and here I'm going to add a select. Let me close out the paragraph. So here's a begin and end select, and inside of that, we want to create a series of options. And so we're going to say normal. And I'm going to copy and paste this a couple times. Here we got Chicago deep dish. And we'll say that's plus $2. And then we're going to go New York thin. All right. And I want to also designate a value for each of these options. And the value is what will be sent back to the web server for this given select control. And we need to give this a name of crust. So the name will be crust, and then the user can choose at this point just one option. Either, and we'll use a little coding here, a C1, a C2, or C3. So, hey, Vinny, we got a C3. Go ahead and, you know, work up more New York thin crusts for us, okay? Something along those lines. So here we go. Let's go ahead and save this and open it up in a browser, and you can see what it looks like. All right, so here is a drop-down list box where we can choose normal, deep dish, or New York thin. Great. And it doesn't take up any vertical spacing. Now, what we could do is add an attribute called multiple, and just by adding that single attribute, notice what happens. It changes from a drop-down list to show all the options that are available. Now, you can restrict that size and make it only show like 3 or 5 options. This is what I was talking about a little bit earlier, okay? So at any rate, what if I wanted to pre-select the normal option? Well, what we could do, or pre-select the Chicago deep dish, because that's our specialty. We'll just add the selected attribute and refresh, and you can see by default Chicago deep dish is selected. I believe this will work on any of these. Let's try selected and radio type medium selected, and let's see what we get. Actually, I think it's checked. There we go. Checked is the right option. Similar in thought, just a different attribute. Okay. So by default, a medium, and all pizzas will include onion by default unless you deselect it, or if you change the size, okay? Alrighty. Let's continue on here. And I'm gonna add an area for the user who's ordering a pizza to type in any delivery instructions. And I'm gonna use a different type of input box called a text area. So it has a whole different element name. And we're gonna give it a name equal comments. And here we're gonna give it a number of columns and a number of rows. So we'll give it 50 columns in width and then 5 rows in height. And then also we're going to add the max length and only allow 1,000 characters. Let's go ahead and save that and look at it. And you can see I've done something wrong here. The problem is I didn't add a closing text area. And what it did was it treated everything after the opening text area as text that belongs inside. So we might say, inside here, how do we get to your house? All right, and you can see how that will manifest itself here. And notice that it uses kind of a pre, so we may want to even remove some of this if we wanted to default that. All right, there we go. And we could delete this and say, go to the end of the street, blah, 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 okay? And I think that's an important point too, because we can pre-fill these, like the text area, for example, the text input, by adding a value to begin with, what is your name? Now, admittedly, this wouldn't be too smart because it would force the user to have to go in and delete all that and then type. And there are some ways for us to kind of, you'll see this effect on some forms that they put like a little description of what the form is inside of the box in a very light gray font, and then you put your mouse cursor in and it disappears. They're using a combination of JavaScript and a plugin called jQuery. If you want to know more about at least the basics of what the foundation you'll need to introduce that into your web forms, you'll want to watch the JavaScript and jQuery foundational series also on Channel 9, okay? So at any rate, I just wanted you to know about the value. Let's go ahead and remove that for now. And how we were able to introduce information into our text area, and I'm removing that as well. Now up to this point, we haven't given the user any way to actually say, okay, I've filled out all the information on my form. Let's go ahead and send that information to the web server and continue on with the ordering process. So we need a submit button. And we'll talk about the different kinds of input types for submitting forms. The easiest way to do this is input type equals submit. Value equals continue to step two. But we can also do something called a reset. So you'll see this sometimes in older web pages. Reset value equals reset values. And let's see how these are manifested. All right, so now at the very bottom, you can see we have a continue to step two. If we were to click that, it will try to open up form.aspx. Obviously, we don't have that, so we get this Internet Explorer cannot display the web page, and that's perfectly fine. We'd have to pick that up in an ASP.NET series, all right? But if we were to make selections here, like customer name, the options that we want, New York thin crust, and type in some delivery instructions, and then hit reset values, notice we use that input type equals reset, and it resets all the options back to their original. Okay, so those are the two different types of buttons that we can use, and there are a couple more. We'll talk about that in just a moment. One last thing that I want to talk about is the label. Up to this point, we've been wrapping the label around the entire control and any text inside of it. However, there's another way to use the label control. Let me just demonstrate here, or the label element rather. We can add a for attribute, and so we can say it's for the comments, and it should look exactly the same. It's just a different way of doing it, and you'll see that used sometimes. All right, so delivery instructions, and there you go. Okay, so one thing I wanted to point out, and I wasn't really consistent with this, but I started doing this at the very top. You'll notice that in this case I use the attribute name and the attribute ID. Typically the ID is used on the client side for scripting, like whenever you're creating JavaScript to create some validation on the client, to make sure that somebody filled in the information here, it wasn't too long, that perhaps it really does look like a phone number, some initial validation on the client side using JavaScript. You'll typically want to reference items using an ID, whereas on the server, it expects to see a name. That's part of what gets packaged up in the HTTP post and stuffed into the HTTP request envelope, I guess you would say, and sent over to the web server. And so you have to use the name for that purpose. And so I'd recommend using both on your elements and then keeping the names identical just for clarity in your own mind whenever you're doing web development. Okay, let's continue on here. We've seen several examples of input elements. We've looked at input type equals text, input type equals radio, input type equals checkbox, input type equal or select rather, and then also the text area. Input type equals submit, input type equals reset. But there are quite a few other input elements that can be used. You can see these on screen right now. Here's a complete list. The ones that we haven't looked at are input type equals password, hidden, file, if you want to upload or allow a user to upload a file. There's some work that has to be done on the server as well to accept the file, but creating the ability for somebody to click a button and choose from a file picker off of their local computer which file they want to upload, that gives it that capability. There's also, we looked at the submit and reset. There's an image for an image button, so you can use a image instead of the Battleship Gray style buttons like we've used here in our example. And then there's also just a type equals button. And then there are different types of buttons. There's the button type equals button type equals submit, and the button type equals reset. So you might be wondering what the difference is between input type equals submit and button type equals submit. And so basically, the button has more CSS properties available to it for the purpose of styling. One of the biggest features is the ability to include images on the button itself using the button control or the button element. So the creator of a tool called Wufoo, a popular forms product on the web, he wrote up a really interesting blog post about his experiences at this URL that you see on screen. It's one of the best articles for an in-depth look, and I recommend that you look into that if you're interested in that information. Okay, so to wrap up this lesson, I just want to say that this is really only half of the story when it comes to forms in HTML5. We've covered the basics that are supported by older versions of HTML, and in the next lesson I want to specifically target the new features that are added in HTML5. I promised that I would try to avoid this. However, the fact of the matter is that at the time that I recorded these lessons, Internet Explorer 9 doesn't support many of the HTML5 features related to forms. However, Internet Explorer 10.0 does support many of them, and so we'll want to see that in action in the next lesson. But don't worry, I'll explain the ramifications of using these new HTML5 form elements in the next lesson. Be sure you watch it. We'll see you there. Thank you. Mm-hmm.